A Syrian refugee family resettles in Indiana. Why the governor couldn't stop it. Andre Carson blames Donald Trump after he receives a death threat. Ben Carson campaigns in Indiana, and a town board meeting turns into a fist fight. That plus IU goes to a bowl game and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 11, 2015.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, a Syrian refugee family resettled in Indiana. That's despite the governor's attempts to stop Syrian resettlements here. According to Catholic Charities, the family fled Syria 3 years ago and spent the last 2 years going through extensive interviews and security checks. The governor maintains the U.S. should suspend and review the Syrian refugee intake program, but he says the family can receive state services.
I'm going to continue to suspend this program and join more than 30 other governors and more than 250 members of Congress in calling for a pause.
Why did Catholic Charities defy the governor? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Kenzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, what did we learn this week about the governor's ability to stop Syrian immigration?
What we knew last week was that he has no ability to stop Syrian immigration, and all this was about is a political move on his part, just, you know, try to gain himself some points with the Tea Party in his party. But, you know, the Archbishop answers to a higher power here, okay? And he's going to do what's right. And what was right is to take people who need to come to this country for safety purposes and who have been thoroughly vetted and make room for them. And we can do that. We've always done that as a nation. The governor should recognize that and stop political posturing.
Well, something that became clear this week that wasn't previously, because the ACLU apparently got it wrong, and so it was reported wrongly that the governor could cut off things like food stamps and welfare. He can't do that.
No.
All he can stop is payments that go for actual moving expenses.
He said that anybody here that's here legally will receive the services that are there warranted from the city of Indiana, and he was right to say so. You know, this was, as we've talked about this before, but this was not about this family. They were in the pipeline before all of this really broke, and the governor, along with 30 other governors, called for the suspension. This was because there was a family here they had relatives here, and that's why they were settling here. But he was right to make the call to try to be safe in Indiana, because there are problems with this program. The last time we ever had a program, somebody in this part of the country that was a terror threat was in 2009, when we had one down on Bowling Green, Kentucky, that was here part of an Iraqi refugee program. And at that time, Obama suspended the program for 6 months because this terrorist got into the country by way of a refugee program. So they were smart to ask that the government suspend this, and they did ask that. And I think they, you know, people in the Midwest, you know, I got this sense that it's not going to happen here. And when it does happen here, people will be screaming and yelling about what could have we done to prevent it. So I think it's smart for the governor to try to be on the side of safety.
You can't thoroughly prevent it no matter what you do. Well, it doesn't necessarily have to do anything.
The problem
it doesn't have to do with immigration.
The problem here is that these folks are coming from a country where there's no background information on these folks. And that's what the problem is.
And that's why it's taken them 3 years to get here. Because they are doing that, and they're doing it thoroughly.
But now you have a flood of people.
My point is, with homegrown terrorism, you cannot insulate everybody, no matter what.
Terrorism.
Well, but that's what we've had here.
Let's go to John. Apparently, the Syrian family has made a request to meet with the governor, and the governor has scheduled conflicts. What does that tell you?
He's scared.
Well, I think there's that is full of pitfalls in terms of public relations for the governor, it seems to me. We're getting here, and this issue is becoming so complex that I think, as we've discussed earlier, and again, we'll just talk about it first in the pure political terms, he scored, I think, points with Hoosiers, the majority of Hoosiers, and the majority of members of his party, as polling has shown, by taking the stance that he did.
Okay, so the stance that he did and not being successful, does he lose points?
He's
weak.
Well, there's not much he could do. It's not as if he's going to, after talking to the Archbishop a week or so ago, say, I've changed my mind. We're going to take a different course. So his path is set, it seems to me. But whereas that first sort of PR hit may have been beneficial, now, because of all sorts of things such as the entrance of Donald Trump's comments on immigrants and Muslim immigrants of not only from Syria but from anywhere.
We're going to get to that next.
I'm just saying the it's a lot more complicated now, and the PR break isn't as clean and crisp. So why expose yourself to a photo op or a meeting with the family?
Okay, but so he's in a news conference this week arguing that he wasn't discriminating. He wouldn't discriminate based on religion. He differentiated his position from Donald Trump's, but said he was acting here based on country of origin, but not nationality. It gets difficult to comprehend.
I think you're slicing it way too thin at that point. And I think this governor has suffered from an inflexibility. You know, you mentioned, John, what could he have done after he met with the Archbishop? Could he have said, well, you know, I've changed my mind? Yes, he could have done that. But this governor, in many issues, has been inflexible. Once he cites his position, he will not move from that position. And I think that's cost him politically for at least the last year and a half.
Well, I will say it's exactly right. And he looks incredibly weak now because he didn't change his position.
I'll stipulate.
Yes,
most Hoosiers
right.
are glad he tried to protect us from the idea that you're going to have
refugees.
He could have he could have changed his position. But the same people who probably supported him the first time with his decision a couple weeks back would see that as a sign of weakness, and there's a sense that you don't
do anything. It is all weakness.
Let's move on. GOP presidential candidate Donald Trump this week called for a ban on Muslims entering the U.S. Indiana Congressman Andre Carson, one of two Muslims serving in Congress, says Trump's rhetoric is creating a culture of fear. He received a death threat at his office after Trump's announcement.
Most people who come here from other countries come with good intentions. They want to live the American dream. That does not say that we should not address the very real terrorist threat that exists internally, but it also says we should not now become a nation of bigots and go against the principles of our founding fathers.
Mike McDaniel, it's tough to disagree with that, isn't it?
Yeah, how can you? I think Trump's comments were despicable. It's not the kind of thing that you want a candidate for president of the United States to say, and I think it will come back to haunt him. And it's I think there is an atmosphere now that probably breeds a threat like Representative Carson had in his life, and that's just uncalled for in this country. I'm sorry.
And there's a poll out today from Christine Matthews, Bellwether Research, that shows that Donald Trump leads other Republican primary candidates in Indiana.
That's pretty frightening, to tell you the truth, because I agree with Mike on this. There's no excuse for that kind of rhetoric, and it does stir up the kind of bigotry and hatred that we hate to see. And it does lead to crazy actions like death threats that Representative Carson received. Now, mainstream Republicans have repudiated him, and I thought, for example, Paul Ryan's comments on this were very well taken. And you have to, because this is not what our country stands for. And if he doesn't understand that, he probably doesn't deserve to be an American, much less to be a candidate for president.
But it doesn't seem to hurt him.
Republican primary voters in polls.
He leads in polls, but I got to say, it does concern me that those numbers exist. You know, Donald Trump is one thing. We all can agree that he's a buffoon, that he's an opportunist, and that he's taken the opportunity too far. But the problem is a lot of people are buying this. A lot of people are seeing him as telling the truth while everyone else is lying. And that's wrong, but that's the perception. And there are a lot of people. He's given license to a lot of people to believe this. I worry that he's unleashing some fury that we really don't want to deal with.
Well, we have far too many chapters of this kind of thing in U.S. history and world history. And we know how it ends invariably. And it's
sad.
Badly, exactly. But it does play to people's worst fears, and if you can find a way to blame every problem in society, every misfortune on, it's not your fault, John, it's somebody else somewhere, that really does stir up a lot of hatred. As far as the poll, whether he can win the nomination or not, I mean, there's no way he could win the general election, so... There is just no way.
Talk of Republicans in Washington trying to figure out how to avoid a Trump nomination.
Third-party candidacy.
What you've got here is that he has tapped into the anger that a lot of Americans have. They think this president's weak, and not only this president, but they think political leadership in this country generally is weak, and they're tired of people not dealing with what they perceive to be national defense threats and other things. And because he's a celebrity, and every time he utters a word, he gets all the airtime and all the ink and everything that goes with it. Yep. He says this crazy stuff, and then, you know, his numbers are continuing to go because he's tapped into the anger. Well, now, we've yet to have a person vote in a primary for this election. And until we start having actual people show up and vote, You're not going to know how strong he is.
You don't know whether these people are people that are actually going to come out in Iowa in the middle of the snowstorm to cast a
caucus vote.
Well,
in Iowa, New Hampshire doesn't make any difference anyway.
Either way.
Until we get to about mid-March when you've had several primaries behind you, you're going to know where we are on this stuff.
All right, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, is Donald Trump's rhetoric presidential? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, maybe it's time for a new definition. Last week's question, should the mayor of Indianapolis get a 30% raise? 33% said yes, 36% said no, 31% said not that much. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Presidential politics came to Indiana this week. GOP candidate Ben Carson held the first public rally of the 2016 cycle at the War Memorial Coliseum in Fort Wayne.
And there are some people who try to say that this is not a great nation, that this is not an exceptional nation, that we are responsible for a lot of the ills in the world. But have you noticed that there's a lot of people trying to get in here and not a lot of people trying to get out? Have you noticed that? It's not a bad place to be.
John Katzenberger, does it make sense for a presidential candidate to conduct a rally in Indiana in December?
Well, not to me, but I'm not Ben Carson, and he's obviously, you know, playing to his own drummer. He got a crowd. He's at the Coliseum, had a fundraiser, made a few bucks. So, you know, I guess it makes some sense there, but it doesn't make any sense politically.
There are I think 40 states hold their primaries or caucuses
prior to Indiana.
In 2008, when we saw all sorts of presidential activity here, the first rally took place in March.
Yeah, I would presume that the fundraiser was on the schedule first, and then this was sort of a situation where you might as well, if you're in town and have a little extra time, do a public event. And as far as coming to Indiana, period, I didn't look at their schedule for the week, if it's even posted anywhere, but perhaps it's because they were going from Ohio to Illinois. And
he was in Chicago.
Okay,
before he came
and
here.
It just you might as well, you know, you're in the neighborhood.
Well, Fort Wayne's a lovely place to be.
It is a lovely place to be. Will he still be in the field when the May primary
could
takes
be.
Place?
Could be. And I think one of the reasons they did this was because I think a lot of people believe that Indiana's still going to be in play in May, and that's you know, it hadn't happened to us since 1976 on the Republican side. And if he believes that, then he's smart to get out in front of it. He had 2,500 people in December. I mean, that's pretty impressive, you know. Yep. I mean, you got to give him style points for that, for even doing it. You know, Hillary Clinton came here and had a fundraiser, didn't do any public events.
Jeb Bush did the same thing.
They don't have public events.
Right.
Rubio didn't have public. I give him credit for doing it.
I think it's probably the only place that wanted them, tell you the truth. I had a question, though. And at the fundraiser, did they serve Hamas or hummus when they were there?
I wasn't there.
Oh, okay. But okay. I just wondered whether he got that straight yet or not in his talks about terrorist threats.
You're suggesting that he's not worldly?
I'm suggesting that he doesn't probably know where to pick the countries out on a map.
Let's move on. There are a number of local government issues in the spotlight this week. There are a pair of new studies regarding the effects of property tax caps, and State Senator Brant Hirschman has a proposal for $400 million in local road funding. But this town board meeting in Hymera, Indiana, tops the list. It looked more like a bar fight than a board meeting in the town of about 800 people south of Terre Haute. Before it was over, police were called, and the state police will investigate. Things got out of hand during a discussion regarding the firing of a town marshal accused of working fewer hours than he was paid for.
I just tried to ask a simple question as to why we terminated the town marshal in October.
Judge Juarez, could those people win a Walmart fight?
Jim, I'm not sure where to take that question. I guess there's a theme of today's show, maybe. It's this notion of anger and lack of civility in our public discourse. This is another example. I guess sort of the old rules maybe don't apply anymore in terms of how meetings are conducted and how frustration.
And there are cameras everywhere.
How frustration. Well, that's everywhere. True. A lot of these things may have happened and just out of out of public view. But I think clearly, if I may say, the far more substantive of the three things you mentioned was what the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute released its reports, because that really does raise a real critical fundamental question of public policy.
Since you set John up, let's...
Even I can hit this one, Jim.
Well, you put out a study. You put out a study that showed that property tax caps are good for taxpayers, not necessarily good for local governments.
Yeah, it is a mixed bag. It's not really unexpected, but this is the first time we've had a chance to see what the overall effect has been. $727 million last year alone in taxpayers' pockets because of the caps. But that means that the communities didn't get that money, and so they've had to figure out a lot of ways to try to make ends meet. A lot of them are using local option income taxes. Some of them are implementing fees. All of them have cut some kinds of services. And I think the General Assembly is going to come back, and they've continued to adjust along the way, and I think they're going to have to continue to do that until they find the equilibrium, because that's, the overall finding here is that they're still trying to find their way, and until you find that balance so that you can provide the services that people expect, you're going to have to continue to tinker with it.
So Brant Hirschman came up with this proposal this week to spend over $400 million from a reserve fund that comes from local income taxes.
All it is the local option income tax money that the state holds for a period of time. So he's taking the locals' money and giving it back to the locals,
right,
but telling them how to spend it.
Well, he's saying you can use 75% of it for transportation needs. You can use 25% for whatever you want.
Where's the idea that you have local government making those decisions and that's the best way to do it? We're taking money that the local government needs to operate and we're telling them how to spend it. And that's supposed to be a road program.
They want road money.
They want road money. They don't want a one-time deal. One time is not going to fix the infrastructure needs of this state.
The governor endorsed it.
This
is a great idea. And the reason it's a great idea is because the way the law is written, the state is required to keep 50% of that money in reserve, in a trust. What he's saying is because there is a problem there, we're going to make that change so that you get this one-time road money. And it's not just for roads. They can also put in a rainy day fund, and 25%, as you said, is discretionary. And this is another way to unleash a good amount of money, and I bet you all of the municipalities that get this are going to cash the checks.
Nobody will turn it down.
Yeah, I don't think so. And the reason this is good is because, again, it unleashes this money without raising any taxes. Now, he will be the first to tell you, as will the governor, that you still have to find a long-term solution. And we've all agreed here that it's probably not going to happen in a short session, probably more likely in a long session. But almost $500,000 to go to local roads. In some of these counties, if you look at the distribution, this is a goodly amount of money.
Indianapolis gets $48 million.
This is money they wouldn't get
for 18 months.
They have to keep
it. They're going to hold it again.
50% forever.
They're going to hold it again.
Well,
right?
They have to. It's a one-time deal.
Yeah, so it's a one-time deal. Yeah. And they're being told to spend it on roads and transportation. Yeah,
or whether put it in a rainy day fund. Yeah. Not
whether,
just roads
yeah,
and
but trans. Whether they need it for that or whether they need it for more police on the streets or whether they need it, they can't use 75% of it
they
that
can
way.
Use bigger, more it's funda-
not, they're not going to get it anyway.
Public policy question here, though, is simply we've come out from several decades, as long as we've been doing this show, where taxes of any kind, bad, must cut taxes, uncut waste, cut waste.
And we're paying the price.
And at the same time, the public isn't willing to give up services. They want the best schools. They want the best stocked libraries. They want the smoothest roads. It simply doesn't work. You can't do one without the other. I mean,
Tell that to the governor.
All right, moving on. Mayor-elect Joe Hogsett named Troy Riggs as the next chief of police in Indianapolis this week. Riggs will take over for Rick Height on January 1st. It's the first major announcement by Hogsett, a Democrat who was elected on a promise to fight crime. Riggs is the former director of public safety under Mayor Greg Ballard. In his new position, he will report directly to the mayor. Here's Hogsett, followed by Riggs.
As a practical matter, the mayor of the city is the public safety director. I mean, maybe not in title, but certainly in deed. I'm in charge of the public safety, and the buck stops here.
I will expect excellence. I will expect integrity. And let me be clear, if you work hard and you're doing what is right and honorable, you will have my full support, and more importantly, the support of the great citizens of this community.
And Delaney, what does that pick tell us?
Well, Troy Riggs is a cop's cop, and they're pleased with that selection, and I think that's a good selection. He understands the root causes of crime, and he understands statistics, and he understands how to manage a department.
Well, and he understands the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department understands and the crime
how to
issues
manage
in
that.
Indianapolis.
Right. But his hands are still tied by the fact that we don't have enough police officers. And it's a critical shortage in some cases. We're having them come out of the academy faster than they should be. We have a national problem with either excessive police force or perceived excessive police force. And we don't have the time and the luxury of training the next generation of officers well enough to make sure we don't have that problem come up. So it is a critical problem, and as John has indicated, that property tax cap is contributing to that.
Well, based on the campaign we saw, I don't think anybody's surprised that his first announcement is a chief of police. This one seemed to go over pretty well.
Oh, I think it was a good pick. I think it's been universally received in very positive tones. As Ann said, Riggs is data-driven. He's a guy who studies these things very hard. He's the one that came up with the idea that you have certain hot spots in the community,
right,
and you police those and more than you do in others because that's where most of the crime takes place.
By zip code.
And he's done it. He really has done a good job with the analytics of it. And so I think it's good. Now, I have to say I kind of wondered about him saying, well, it could get worse before it gets better. So he's already about lowering expectations. Which
got a little politician.
Yeah, I was going to say he's done a little management on that end of it, but I think it's a great pick. I really do.
Yeah,
smart pick. Looks like the partisanship seems to be put aside because you've plucked somebody who had been worked for the predecessor who came from another party. But also, I think in addition to the person who was picked, as you mentioned, Jim, the change in the reporting structure to have these individuals being police and fire chiefs reporting directly to the mayor, I think sends a strong message, as I'm sure he intended.
It is important. So Joe Hogsett has effectively turned down a raise here and made a big announcement a couple of weeks before he takes office. Off to a good start, would you say?
Oh, I think he's off to a pretty good start, yes.
Finally, the Indiana University football team is going to a bowl game. IU will play in the Pinstripe Bowl in New York City. It's their first bowl appearance in 8 years. They will play Duke University. This week, head coach Kevin Wilson took part in a New York press conference.
Our guys to have a chance to be at a great venue and a great organization, because having been to some bowls, I know bowls can be different. And so with what your organization and what New Era is going to bring for our kids, they'll be blown away.
Mike McDaniel, has IU football turned the corner?
Yeah, I think they have. I really do. They were competitive in every game they played this year against some great teams. And the fact that they get to play in Yankee Stadium, that's got to be thrilling for these young athletes. And that's a wonderful thing. I heard somebody say there are, 60,000 IU alums within 100 miles of New York, so they should have a great turnout. You know, they won enough games now that they stopped playing Ball State.
Well played, Mike.
I think that's true. You got to like it.
It's wonderful. I mean, it's really wonderful. It's a big shot in the arm for the program and for the university in general.
And Fred Glass, too, the AD who's making tickets available for $10 for students. That's
gotta go.
An important thing.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T, rethink possible.